Welcome to the Leadership Journey podcast. I'm Alan Wilson, the host of the podcast. Each week, I'll be chatting to various Christian leaders, discussing some of the things that have contributed to the story of their leadership, and at the same time, encouraging you as you listen to reflect on your own leadership journey. If you've not already subscribed to the podcast, you can do so for free on iTunes or on Castbox. Look for the Leadership Journey podcast. And it would be great if you're able to take a moment to leave us a review. This week, my guest is Rick Hill. I think Rick is the youngest leader I've interviewed in the podcast, and he is probably the tallest. More importantly, Rick is the discipleship officer of the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. Enjoy the podcast. Rick, you are very welcome to the Leadership Journey podcast.
Thank you.
I know that you listen to the podcast. What's been your favourite?
I've probably only been a recent convert in terms of the last maybe...
Convert's a strong word to use.
No, I would call it that, actually. So the last maybe 6 months. I think, actually, some of those who have been engaged in everyday leadership have been some of my highlights. So Sir Nigel, enjoyed Brendan recently as well. And then with my Presbyterian hat on, I've enjoyed people like Russell and Charles more recently as well.
Okay.
So it's been great to hear some of their journey.
Okay, so you're following in those footsteps.
They're big footsteps.
Yeah. One of the things to say, just describe your role, first of all. And what I was going to say as well is... You're probably the youngest person that I've interviewed in this process. Mm-hmm. You qualify as a millennial?
I think so. So I'm early 30s, if that helps.
Okay,
so,
right.
I get called a lot of things, but I'm happy to have that badge. I did actually balk a little bit when you emailed or contacted me to say to come on, because I suppose I look at some of the previous guests and think, goodness, mm-hmm. what have I to offer in the midst of all of those people who have... You know, decades of leadership experience,
sure.
But I'm glad to contribute.
Well, thank you, and I think there's a perspective that you bring as a younger person, and you know, someone leading from within another generation, a different generation from most of the people who've been on the podcast, and I think it'll be interesting to explore some of those things that are different. But describe your role that you've got within the Presbyterian Church.
Yeah, so I've been for the last 4 years. I've been employed by PCI. I'm working as their discipleship development officer, which is really the opportunity to get a wide-angled view of congregations and to try to draw alongside leaders and congregations and help them in their discipleship journeys, really. So, so the role is really a mix of developing resources that congregations can use, delivering some training myself, mm-hmm. At times running events or training courses, mm-hmm. Centrally that people can come, and then quite often I'm out and about actually in congregations having conversations with leaders or maybe delivering training or speaking myself for them as well.
Now, I was going to say, and this may be a difficult question to answer, but what does a typical week look like? Is there just no typical week?
It is really varied. So I've probably been maybe 3 or 4 congregations a week. Sometimes that's daytime mm-hmm. meeting with leaders, having conversations with them about mm-hmm. their culture, strategy, resources, and then I will be office-based maybe for at least 2 or 3 of those days, sometimes having internal meetings, sometimes that's my own prep and planning, and sometimes that's, you know, doing stuff for upcoming events and courses, and then weekend or evening, there would normally be a couple of engagements, whether that's on a Sunday or, mm-hmm. As I say, some courses or training and delivering.
Okay, and the material, so you're writing material then, are you?
Yeah, I suppose early on in the role, it was a lot of envisioning and training people, but quite quickly we realised that there's a need to put resources into people's hands that they can use for themselves. So they don't need me or they don't need someone else. They can do it themselves.
Sure.
So really, it's
sure.
So it's trying to put resources into people's hands that they would be confident with.
Yeah,
and I think people have appreciated actually that.
Right. Is this a new role in the church, or have you succeeded somebody?
Yeah, it was a new role. Well, a slightly different role. So there was someone in a post before me, which was called Young Adults Development Officer, mm-hmm. and then they reshaped that role, and really the church has been having a huge focus on discipleship over the past 5+ years, mm-hmm. and so they felt that they needed to create a role. As with all things, then there's a few young adults pieces of the jigsaw that fell into my role, and I still get to do those. So conferences and training for young adults and young leaders, which I love actually, and I think, I mean, I'll go on to talk about it, but some of my youth ministry background and experience probably attracted me to the role, although in some ways it's the discipleship piece of the jigsaw that I feel I'm really stepping into more and more now.
Right. And so just to be clear then, the discipleship is not just discipleship of young people or young adults, it is church-wide.
Yeah, it's really an all-age role, and more I'm finding myself in that space. Right. So well,
this is a relatively new thing. The Presbyterian Church has been around for a long time. This is a relatively new thing. Why do you think the denomination has chosen to focus on the issue to the extent that they would appoint someone and call them discipleship development officer?
I think because it's significant and it's important and it's essential to be thinking about building discipleship cultures and how we help people to live out the Great Commission. I think possibly because in some parts of the denomination has seen some decline, uh-huh, and maybe even decline culturally, and we're finding probably due to cultural reasons, less and less people are finding themselves walking into the doors of church naturally.
Yeah.
And so in some ways, rather than have a come and see mentality, mm-hmm, about the church, actually there's a need to equip people, mm-hmm, equip disciples to live well in the world and in the culture that they find themselves. So I think there's been a strategic shift in some ways away from how do we get people in our doors and actually how do we equip people to go from our doors,
okay,
and live well in culture. In some ways as well, I think it's been a shift as well to make sure that we're not just seeing ourselves as a pastoral church.
So
we're not just there to care for people, although that's a really good thing, but we're also there to equip them for their everyday lives as well. And so even phrases like everyday discipleship, whole life discipleship, front lines, which have been stolen from the London Institute of Contemporary Christianity, phrases like that have been really, really helpful to us.
Yeah.
And also trying to emphasize not just discipleship, but disciple making as well.
Right.
Okay. So we are called to be disciples who make disciples. Mm-hmm. So it's not just how we live as part of a nice cozy club, or it's not just about us becoming nicer people, mm-hmm, but actually it's about us having an outward dimension to our faith.
So it's very much a missional emphasis then. What I'm hearing you saying, it's not merely a tool to make people better Christians within the walls of the church, but it is with the goal of sending them out.
Certainly that's my heart for their role, and I think that's captured in what the denomination have been doing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go back to the beginning. We may come back to some of these themes about discipleship later on and tease some more of that out. Let's go back a little bit in time to your background, some of the early influences. So tell us a little bit about growing up, family, whatnot.
I grew up, mum and dad were both committed Christians and both heavily involved in leadership in the life of our local church. I have an older sister as well, and we grew up in Templepatrick and attended a local church, Mucklemore Presbyterian Church. Mm-hmm. So dad from... ever since I remember, Dad was hugely involved in leadership. He was the boys' brigade captain. He was an elder and became the clerk of session. Mum was the organist, and Dad helped her with that. And together they shaped the choir and the music ministry that has developed. And they're actually still involved in most of those things. Mm-hmm. Dad gave up the BB recently, but all of the rest of those things I've mentioned, they're still involved in leading. And so I think because of that, and also because of Mum and Dad's commitment to Jesus and this church, I just found myself almost as a child, my life centered around the church.
Yeah.
And so I was being brought along to organizations and all sorts of things, from Sunday school to Boys Brigade to Youth Fellowship to church on Sunday. And actually looking back, I certainly wasn't committed to Christ until my later teenage years, but actually I loved all of that. I really enjoyed being about the church. I loved the people that I met. I loved the activities that I did. And so, looking back, I think that was a huge influence. They have always been a big influence in my life, especially the leadership of my dad. Watching him lead at close quarters, I think, has influenced me, whether I've realised it or not. But it was formative for me being around the local church so much.
But interestingly, you really enjoyed being around that and appreciated and valued all of that. But yet you say it was really a bit later on that you really came to make your own personal commitment to Christ.
Yeah, so teenage years for me were years where I certainly didn't walk away from my knowledge of Jesus, but I just had never made a commitment to him. And so in some ways I went along with the flow. I wanted to be someone who was popular. Popularity for me was important at an early age. And so because of that, really secondary school was, I went down to grammar school. And for me, that was a time where I suppose I sought more to blend into the culture and with people around me, and led me to make, you know, choices that weren't always good or helpful. I was probably the class clown. I tried to be the person who made people laugh and, and did stupid things, really. You know, I don't think there was huge amounts of real badness, but it was, it probably didn't make things easy for teachers, to be honest.
So how did you come to a point then of making this commitment to Christ?
In the midst of the life I was living or not living, I suppose, I was still very much anchored in the local church. I was still part of youth fellowship. I mean, I look back now and I realise Mum and Dad continued to send me to youth group, and I can remember having nights where I argued with them about not going and coming up with all sorts of excuses. And and actually, interestingly, they never, Sunday was never a day where we were allowed to do homework. And if there ever there was a gift of the Sabbath, that was it. Now, I had other frustrations that I couldn't watch as much football as I wanted to on Sundays. But actually, looking back now, I actually found a real joy on Sundays, partly because of the lack of homework that we were allowed to do. You know, it meant Friday nights and Saturdays sometimes were a bit more frustrating. But so I was still part of youth fellowship group on a Sunday night. I was sent along, really, and right up until the age of 16. And so I suppose I was just there. And sometimes I look back and look at other young people who I've led before and sometimes wonder, were they just allowed to opt out too early? And maybe miss an opportunity or an encounter that they could have had. And so simply for me, I went along one night to youth fellowship. We went along as a group to another church where there was a youth event that was happening. And I became a Christian during a worship song, actually.
What was the song, do you remember?
Yeah, it's called The Potter's Hand.
A
Hillsong song, actually. Yeah. And I was just profoundly impacted by the message that I'd heard, but also it caused me to, I guess, consider the life that I was living and where I found my identity, where I was seeking popularity. Mm-hmm. And actually there was someone who loved me no matter what I would do, or I didn't have to earn that affection. Mm-hmm. So quite simply, I used the words of that song to become a Christian. Didn't really tell anyone. But quite an interesting thing happened the next morning. I went into school and I wanted to tell a friend of mine who, we were probably jokers together, to be honest. And he came up to me that Monday morning and he said, "Rick, I've got something to tell you." And I said, "Well, actually, I have something to tell you, and it's going to be more important." And I knew I needed to tell him early, because if I didn't tell him early, then I wondered, would I ever tell him at all? And he pulled me aside. He says, "Well, Rick, I want to tell you that last night at my church," I didn't even know he went to church, but he said, "Last night at my church, I became a Christian." And so that was the 5th of March, 2000, I think. And we, you know, from that moment, actually, that was a clear marker straight away that God was working in this situation. Yeah. And I think we became a huge encouragement to each other. And so that was formative.
Interesting that we're sitting here on the 5th of March, so 19 years later.
Yep. I saw your eyebrows go up there.
that's terrific. What were there big changes then in your life at that point?
There was, of course, I still messed about too much and all of that, but there was a big change. I think I probably, you know, as soon as I came to Christ, I think I had a burning desire to share that with others. Partly because actually my friend Steve and I both shared that news with people quite early on, I think, because we found there was a bit of a miraculous moment, and because of that we shared that with people, and it probably caused a little bit of a ripple effect around our friendship circle and around people in our class. And so because of that, it almost probably created a bit of accountability as well, that actually we need to live that. I think I look back and smile a little at who I was at 17. I was probably a pretty, maybe overzealous young Christian, you know, and I just was hugely enthusiastic and probably a little bit much. maybe in my leadership and in my faith. And I suppose at times I look back and cringe, but other times I look back and I think, I miss that, and I would love to recapture some of that just real naive joy and passion that came.
Were there people then, I mean, I guess because you were so involved in the life of the church and youth fellowship and so on, presumably there were people then who were, can I use the word, ready to disciple you?
Yeah.
Did that happen?
Yeah, I mean, looking back now, I think there's several things. I probably feel like I fell into some opportunities. So, but within 3 or 4 months, I think I was, you know, invited onto our youth fellowship committee. And we had a youth leader there who really invested and released us, actually, to be speaking. And I think he asked me to take on, I played the guitar at the time pretty badly, but he asked me to, you know, take on the responsibility of leading worship every week. And, you know, looking back, it was probably dreadful, you know, the standard and the quality, and yet he continued to give us permission to, and it wasn't just me, there was others in that age group, and so our ideas were listened to, even though he said no idea was stupid. I'm pretty convinced there was lots of ideas that were stupid, but he said that, but he was very releasing and affirming and encouraging of us, and we probably believed that we were brilliant at the things we were doing, partly because of his encouragement, but that was hugely formative.
Yeah. So he was taking you under mm-hmm. the committee and giving you responsibilities.
Yeah.
Were there other leadership responsibilities that were coming your way? Are you one of those people that folk saw early on you're a leader and were giving you things, or were you more of a reluctant leader dragged into it?
No, I was probably a natural leader in the sense of I enjoyed leadership opportunities, and so I mean I think I was just there rather than being sought out. So school Scripture Union then, I threw myself into that and ended up leading the weekly meetings and that alongside, you know, a few others, and loved that. I enjoyed all of those, and I probably really invested time into those things. So when I was asked to lead worship, I was practicing every night in my bedroom, you know, and I was planning for talks that I was being given to do in youth fellowship and the Scripture Union. And there was other things that came along, like opportunities then to serve in the summer. SISM in Benown through Scripture Union was hugely formative for me, because I met a bunch of probably older Christians in that team, people who were older than me at that time, and they were a huge example to me. And then there was another elder, an elder of a local church who ran a youth event in Randallstown, and the youth event was called New Vision, and it was a monthly event, and he was very good at calling young people and young leaders into service. And so I was leading worship there. He was giving us opportunities to speak and lead from the front, and this man's name was George, and George converted his garage so that he could have a place where young musicians practiced. And looking back, the music thing is funny, because I don't really think I was very skilled as a musician, but again, I enjoyed the leadership aspect of it. And so it wasn't really a decision, oh, I would like to be a leader. I think I just fell into lots of opportunities where I ended up leading, but very early on in my faith. So in some ways, I think some of those opportunities shaped my faith.
How can you describe that a bit?
I think because I was so involved, I began to, and because then I think leadership helped me to step into a deeper faith, because I was maybe more dependent in prayer. I was finding myself in environments with other Christian leaders who were really influential to me, you know, without ever being a specific mentor or just, you know, it was just lots of different leaders who I've had the privilege of working with.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are there other specific mentors from that time beyond people who maybe gave you opportunities to get involved in leadership? Was there any sort of formal mentoring happening?
Not formal. Mm-hmm. So probably the two significant influences in my life came a little bit later in terms of the bosses that I had, or as I stepped into full time.
Okay, so talk a little bit about what sort of career path you followed.
In terms of career path, I think straight away from the age of 17 or 18, I was somehow convinced that I would end up in some form of Christian mm-hmm. ministry or full-time Christian service.
But you had no idea how you knew that? You just...
No, I couldn't really... So I actually remember declaring to my minister around the age of 17 that I wanted to become a Presbyterian minister. Uh-huh. Now, the irony is that I was convinced of that then, and I'm probably totally unconvinced of that now in terms of the ordained pastoral ministry. But right. I think I was just articulating that I wanted to serve God and share God in any way I could, and probably that was the best vehicle that I thought, or the only vehicle that I saw at the time. And so I now understand ministry to be a much broader trajectory but than ordained clergy, but at the time that's what I thought. And so because of that, it affected my study choices, and it probably set a trajectory for my life. So I ended up applying to study theology. After my A-levels, I ended up at Belfast Bible College, and I'm hugely thankful for that experience, those 3 years. I studied theology degree, the interdenominational nature of that, it brought me outside my tribe in a good way, and the sort of international aspect of Bible college at that time.
Which at the time there were a lot more international students coming
through. And also probably there were some older students who... You just were challenged by their life, and maybe challenged by their sacrifice of what they had left behind to come and study here, and by their levels of faith. I can remember a Kenyan student, Peter, who I developed a good friendship with, and just his example and his devotion were challenged, and many others as well. But I mean, if I'm honest, some of the classes probably bypassed me, especially maybe in first year. But as I went through Bible college, I think I was realizing that it was youth ministry that I was really wanting to step into initially, and so because of that, and church was a huge part of that, and so the classes became more relevant, I think, as I went along, right. Or I saw the relevance.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I think a student in a Bible college who has a bit of a sense of calling into something is gonna draw a lot more than someone who's maybe not quite sure what's ahead.
But probably it was the culture that shaped me the most rather than...
The culture of the college.
Yeah, I think just the people that I was exposed to and the... the whole culture of this was huge. So I came to the end of that. It was, as I say, looking back, hugely formative. But I came to the end of that, still not sure, obviously, what or how I could explore. And an opportunity came up with Scripture Union to take what was probably a gap year or an intern post before they were called that, or before the term intern was branded. And so I ended up working for 3 days a week, supported actually not by Scripture Union in that year, but supported by my home church, who financially provided for me to be able to work under Scripture Union that year. And I was given the responsibility or the task of engaging with secondary school Scripture Union groups and helping to raise the bar in the Bible engagement that happened. And so I found myself probably in SU groups across the country 2, 3, 4 times a week, and then at the end of that year there was a full-time post that was created or opened up that helped me to step into that, and I worked for SU for 5 years absolutely loved it.
What kind of work did you do with them?
It was mainly in that SU group sector,
still
secondary
same
schools
same
across
type of work,
and it was, I suppose, just developed that, so we developed that to include things like pupil outreach, pupil leadership, and also created different programs that helped those SU groups to think missionally as well. But still, the bread and butter most days was standing in front of a group of teenagers or sitting with a small group of teenagers in some school SU settings and opening the Bible with them. And again, it was hugely formative in terms of learning communication skills, but also in how to handle the Bible. And also, I think I maybe was shaped to think creatively about how I handled the Bible and how that, and the Bible is always relevant, but teenagers don't always see the relevance of it. So to help, you know, to think creatively about how I could present the truth to them. I was actually speaking recently somewhere, and someone came up at the end and said, "Have you ever had, just by any chance, have you ever had any involvement with Scripture Union?" And I said, "I have." And they said, "Well, I can just tell by the way you speak." And I didn't know whether it was an insult or but I took it very much as a compliment. I think I was formed in that, in my communication, I suppose.
Do you look back on that and can you already begin to see that there were maybe things that you were learning then and things you were developing that have come much more to fruition, even in your current work?
Yeah, there's... I can now look back and realise that a lot of my experiences of leadership have involved pioneering.
Right.
So in Scripture Union, this was a more formal pioneering, but there were some opportunities to develop new projects, so new missions. So we began a new mission in Enniskillen that I gathered a team and engaged local churches in. It began, you know, in the summer of, oh goodness, maybe 2008, and it's still running today. And so I pioneered that for the first three or four years, actually, and it began very small, and then another new mission after that in Newton Abbey, too, in a working class housing estate as well. It's still running today, and some projects, a project called Shine that we partnered with Crown Jesus Ministries in developing. And I just look back and realise there was a lot of things that role gave me the opportunity to start and pioneer. And there was other things as well, probably actually a little bit before my time with SU, there was a couple of other things I had the opportunity to pioneer. I think I was probably very naive as a student in terms of, maybe structures and permission giving. I think I sat around with friends at times and we just had conversations like, what if we could do this? And then we just, half an hour later, we're saying, okay, let's do it, and planning that. And so, I mean, a couple of those examples we gathered, I can remember having a conversation with a group of friends, musicians at the time, who said, wouldn't it be great if Christians, whenever Christians stood on the streets to proclaim the gospel, that it would be somehow maybe a more positive aspect of that rather than maybe being seen as negative. And so that led to a whole group of friends driving around Ireland one summer, for two or three summers actually, visiting different towns, sleeping in church hall floors, and singing worship songs in the street and giving out free CDs with worship songs on it and a gospel message. And it was just what some of that naive, we were 19 or 20 at the time, it was just like, let's do it. You know, I can remember sitting with another friend who, again, we're thinking, actually, what would it look like to gather teenagers in the summer? He was based in Ballymena. I wasn't living too far away from that. What would it look like to gather a group of teenagers in the summer, to gather them for worship and teaching in the morning and send them out as the hands and feet of Jesus in the afternoon and evening to do, to be good news, you know, to be involved in area cleanups and litter picking and gardening. And we ended up beginning a ministry called Spark in Ballymena, that again still happening today, that my friend Matthew, who's now a Presbyterian minister in Ballymena, but he has been able to carry forward, and I was just involved in it for 2 or 3 years, and then actually brought it to Newton Abbey at a later date as well. But you know, again, it's just looking back and realising, I think I look back and realise it was probably like one of those four men who brought their friend to Jesus and burrowed a hole through the roof, you know, just probably causing a huge amount of mess, maybe, and pretty naive in terms of asking permission, but just like, let's get the job done, let's do things. And I mean, I think we were so naive that the first time we had this idea of running this initiative called Spark, and we wrote a letter to every minister in Ballymena. I mean, we were 20 years old, we didn't have a clue what we're doing, but we invited them to a breakfast at which we would tell them about this initiative which we were running in the summer. And you look back and you partly cringe, but somehow God bless some of those things. And they were hugely formative in your leadership, in my leadership. I mean, hugely. You look back and suddenly then there's 150 young people turning up for a week in the summer, and I mean, that involves leadership. And we learned on the job.
Did you? Well, as much leadership, I think much leadership learning does happen on the job. Did you have anybody who was helping to sort of give you a wee bit of a steer at this point? Or you weren't just on your own, were you?
No, we certainly with the worship initiative, the man I mentioned earlier, George Barclay, he was hugely influential to us. I think we were probably the ones who thought we were doing all the leading on the ground, but I think he was probably cleaning up a lot of mess behind the scenes. In fact, I know he was. And but yet again, protected us from some of that and was also hugely encouraging and helping us to resource that too in terms of seeking funding and some of the permissions that we actually needed to get. And so, yes, and some of those ministers I mentioned in terms of Ballymena were very gracious in the fact that they probably... Well, they allowed us to. They didn't cause a fuss. Yeah.
Was this the burning there at the time?
No, it was just after, literally just after his time, or just as he was retiring. So people like Norman Brown in Wellington, and Ballymena, huge, just permission givers and releasers, and
So I mean, it makes me want to ask a question then. So you've got a minister or pastor who's listening to the podcast, and they have a bunch of 20-year-olds around who just seem to have these crazy ideas. You're probably you're wanting to say to them, be permission givers, are you?
Yes. I think that's sometimes the worst thing we can say is a blanket no. I did hear a minister talk recently. He said, I say yes to every idea, but I don't resource it. And I thought that was, you know, I thought there was wisdom in that, in terms of allowing people to run with the dreams that they feel that God has placed in their heart, but knowing when to resource that or knowing when to steer it and not. So yeah, I mean, I'll maybe talk later about how I try and do that in my leadership now, but a huge yes to releasing and pioneering, and maybe not a hands-off. I think there can be a hands-off releasing in terms of, yes, I don't want to own this idea, so you go and make your mistakes, but actually somehow an equipping and how would a minister or a leader guide that 20-year-old? How would they help them to see some of the pitfalls that may exist, or go before them, and or do some of the behind-the-scenes work for them?
So. Yeah, it's like when you teach if you're teaching your small child to cross the road, you don't simply show them a video on the television of here's how to cross the road, and then take them to the edge of the road and say, right, off you go. There's going to be a fair bit of hand-holding before the child crosses the road on their own.
Absolutely.
And that's how they learn.
It's modelling. Yeah. And doing with.
Yeah, yeah. Great. Listen, Rick, we're going to pause there for this particular episode, but thank you for what you've shared already. And we'll come back next time and we'll pick up the story, maybe some of the transition from what you were doing then to what you're doing today, and I'd like to dig in a little bit into some of the challenges that you feel that you face as a young leader, and maybe some of the ways that older leaders can help you, even if it is just getting out of the way. Okay. So thank you.
No problem.
Thanks, Rick, and thank you for taking time to listen to the podcast. Be sure to join us again next week, and in the meantime, have a good week.